You're listening to ESL Podcast English Cafe, number 334. This is English as a Second Language Podcast, English Cafe, episode 334. I'm your host, Dr. Jeff McQuillan, coming to you from the Center for Educational Development in beautiful Los Angeles, California. Visit our website at ESLPOD.com. Download this episode's learning guide, an 8 to 10 page guide we provide for all of our current episodes that gives you some additional help in improving your English. On this cafe, we're going to talk about another one of our great national parks in the United States, the Grand Teton National Park. We'll also continue our series on famous songs. We'll be talking today about a song called She'll Be Comin' Round the Mountain. And as always, we'll answer a few of your questions. Let's get started. Our first topic on this cafe is the Grand Teton National Park. Grand Teton National Park is in the northwestern part of the state of Wyoming. Wyoming is in the central western part of the United States. It's next to Montana. Montana is to the north. Colorado is to the south. The park is named after the Teton, T-E-T-O-N, range. A range is a line of mountains that are connected together. The Teton Range is part of the Rocky Mountains in the western United States and Canada. Grand Teton National Park covers or has a size of about 310,000 acres. It includes the major or most important peaks in the Teton Range. A peak, P-E-A-K, is the top or highest point of a mountain. Grand Teton National Park also includes a very beautiful valley. A valley is the low area in between two mountains. The valley is called the Jackson Hole Valley. It is, in fact, a beautiful area. I was in the Grand Teton National Park many years ago, almost 40 years ago, and it is very beautiful. The national park is just 10 miles south of another famous national park, Yellowstone, which we talked about in English Cafe number 88. The two national parks are connected by other federal or nationally owned land. It is, in fact, what is called the largest intact ecosystem of its type in the world, these two parks combined. When we say it's intact, I-N-T-A-C-T, we mean it is unbroken. It is one piece. This area is one of the largest intact ecosystems or biological environments in the world. It was first protected by federal law back in the late 19th century, but it didn't become a national park until 1929. There have been additional lands that have been added to the park since 1929, but it is quite old. Grand Teton National Park is home to many different plant and animal species or types of plants and animals. There are many moose, bison, black bears, and wolves. A moose, M-O-O-S-E, is the same in the singular or plural. It's one of those words where even if you say two or three, it's still moose. We don't say mooses. We say three moose, two moose, one moose. It's a kind of large elk or a deer with very large ears. That's what a moose is. A bison is also the same in singular and plural. We have one bison or many bison. A bison is like a buffalo or a very, very large cow, you can think of it, with lots of heavy hair. People who visit Grand Teton National Park can enjoy stunning views of the Rocky Mountains. Something that is stunning, S-T-U-N-N-I-N-G, is very beautiful, very impressive. You could say a woman wearing a beautiful dress looks stunning. She looks very beautiful. You stop. To stun, S-T-U-N, as a verb, usually means to shock or surprise someone, often in a negative way. But here it's used in a positive way to mean very, very beautiful. The Grand Teton National Park, I mentioned, also has many lakes, or if I didn't mention, I'll say it now, it has many beautiful lakes. These lakes were formed by glaciers. A glacier, G-L-A-C-I-E-R, are basically large pieces of ice, large rivers of ice that move very slowly over very long periods of time. In fact, the word glacial as an adjective means something that moves extremely slowly. These large glaciers created these lakes. These lakes, in this case, send their water into something called the Snake River, which runs through the park from north to south. Grand Teton National Park has several visitor centers. A visitor center is a building where you, as a visitor, can get information about that park or that area. Grand Teton also has several large lodges. A lodge, L-O-D-G-E, as a noun, is a very large building, usually made out of wood or rock, where you can spend your time. It's basically a big hotel, an old hotel. Several of the national parks in the United States and in Canada have large hotels inside them that are called lodges because they are made in a certain style, usually out of wood and rock. Grand Teton National Park is a nice place if you like to hike, if you like to walk around in the mountains or in nature. It's a good place if you like to bike, go on your bicycle. It's a good place if you like to fish. You can also do horseback riding and watching birds. So these things, hiking, biking, fishing, horseback riding, and bird watching, are all things that I do not enjoy doing, so there's really no reason for me to go to Grand Teton National Park. Actually, I did enjoy it when I was there because it's very beautiful to look at. I'll let everyone else do the hiking and the biking. In the wintertime, you can also go snowshoeing in the park. Snowshoeing is when you put on these big, they're not really shoes. They look more like, what's the word I'm thinking of? They look more like tennis rackets that you put on your feet. and they allow you to walk in deep snow. I've been snowshoeing in Minnesota several times. I did so when I was younger. Can't say I really enjoyed it, but it is good exercise. In any case, Grand Teton National Park is a beautiful part of the country, and if you're going to the western part of the United States and you have some extra time to drive from, say, San Francisco or from Denver, Colorado, it is a beautiful area to see, both the Yellowstone and the Grand Teton National Parks. I should probably mention that the word Teton, T-E-T-O-N, is somewhat controversial in that people have different explanations as to why the mountains are called the Teton Range and the park Grand Teton National Park. Some people believe that it comes from the Teton Indians, the Sioux Indians in that part of the country. It was the western group of Sioux Indians. The Sioux Indians were Indians, American Indians or Native Americans, that lived in the Midwest and western part of the U.S., in the northern part of the United States. That's one explanation. Other people believe that it was a name given to these mountains by either the French or the Indians traveling with the French. Teton is related to the French word for teat, T-E-A-T in English, which is a woman's breast. You can imagine mountains perhaps reminding a lot of men by themselves of a woman's breast. And so that's another possible explanation. In English, the more common informal word for this would be tit, T-I-T. However, that's considered by many people to be maybe not vulgar, but certainly very informal, not a word to use in front of your children or your boss. Now let's move on to our next topic, which is a famous folk song in American history. The song is called "She'll Be Comin' Round the Mountain." The phrasal verb to come around, in this case abbreviated come round, we drop the A, is an informal way of saying to come, especially when you are moving around something else. To come around the mountain would mean not to go to the top and then to the bottom of the mountain, not to go over the mountain, but to go in the land, the valleys in between the mountains. That would be to come around a mountain. To come around as a phrasal verb can also mean to change your mind, to change your opinion on something. But here it means the more literal definition of to move from one place to another, to come to one place. Like a lot of great American music or music we associate with the United States, this song comes from the African American community. It was originally what's called an African American spiritual. A spiritual, S-P-I-R-I-T-U-A-L, is a religious song. Spirituals were religious songs that were created and sung by black slaves in North America. The spiritual, in this case, was about the second coming of the founder of the Christian religion, Jesus Christ. According to Christian beliefs, you may know, Jesus is the Son of God, and one day he will return to earth. You'll remember he was born 2,000 years ago and then died, and according to Christian theology, went to heaven, and he will come back to earth someday. And when he does, that will be the end of time. That will be the end of our current way of living. So the second coming is the second return of Jesus, his return back to earth, to our planet. Now, the she in this song is not a woman. When we say she'll be coming round the mountain, we're not referring to a woman or a girl. We're referring to the vehicle in which Jesus will return to earth. A vehicle is like a car or a truck, something that moves you from one place to another. Now, Jesus in the song will be returning in a chariot. A chariot, C-H-A-R-I-O-T, is a small vehicle with two wheels that's pulled by a horse. If you've ever seen movies about ancient Rome, they often have chariot races in them. A very famous movie from my youth was Ben-Hur with Charlton Heston. And in the movie, there are these chariot races. I think more recently, the Russell Crowe movie Gladiator might also have had a chariot race. Is that right? I don't remember. Didn't really like that movie, so don't remember it very well. Anyway, chariot races then were popular among, we are told, the ancient Romans, at least according to Hollywood. Well, Jesus then will be returning in one of these vehicles, in a chariot. One of the lines in the original song is, "Oh, who will drive the chariot when she comes?" So the she is the chariot. The modern version of "She'll be coming round the mountain," however, is not considered by most people to be a spiritual. It's thought of more as a children's song. So instead of talking about Jesus' second coming, the original meaning, now it's more about when someone is going to visit you and stay with you. So it could be about any person or any woman. So in the modern version, it is a woman. The she is a woman. The original song was written in the late 19th century. And like a lot of songs, there are many different versions of this song. I should say a lot of folk songs. There are many different versions. Here's the song that I remember, and this is a song that most American children are taught at some point in their young lives. "She'll be coming round the mountain when she comes. She'll be coming round the mountain when she comes. She'll be coming round the mountain. She'll be coming round the mountain. She'll be coming round the mountain when she comes." Very complicated lyrics, just one sentence repeated over and over again. "She'll be coming round the mountain when she comes." The idea is that when she does actually arrive, she's going to arrive by coming around the mountain. The other parts of the song are the same. They're a repetition of one line. Here's another verse, another part of the song. "She'll be driving six white horses when she comes. She'll be driving six white horses when she comes. She'll be driving six white horses. She'll be driving six white horses. She'll be driving six white horses when she comes." To drive a horse means to ride it, to lead it in a certain direction, to control where it goes. So this woman, whoever she is, will be driving or riding six white horses when she arrives, when she comes here. Another verse is, "Oh, will all come out to meet her when she comes?" We'll all go and be there when she arrives. Or, "Will kill the old red rooster when she comes." A rooster is a kind of chicken. I'm not sure why we'll kill the old red rooster. I guess to eat it. I'm not sure. Sometimes children make funny songs at the end of each line. So when they sing, for example, "Oh, we'll all come out to meet her," they might say something like, "Howdy, Ma." which means hello, mom. Howdy is another way, an old-fashioned way of saying hello. Ma, M-A, is short for mom or mother. Sometimes when the song is sung with children and they use the line, "We will kill the old red rooster," they might make a noise of a rooster, a male chicken. It's a fun song, and if you want to hear more of it, you can find many recordings of it online, I'm sure. Now let's answer some of the questions that you have sent to us. Our first question comes from Sarok, S-A-R-O-C-H, in Thailand. The question has to do with the words congratulations, thanks, and kudos. Congratulations is something you say to someone who has done something well or who has achieved or accomplished something. We often say this to someone, for example, who has gotten married. Congratulations. Or they had a new baby. Congratulations. Or they won some prize or won some contest. All of these would be situations in which we would say congratulations. Notice that there's an S at the end of the word. The same is true for the word thanks and kudos. However, thanks as a noun is used when you are expressing your appreciation to someone. It always is plural. You would say, many thanks for helping me. Or, I want to give you my thanks for everything you've done for me. We never say, I want to give you a thank. It would always be thanks, plural, just like congratulations has an S at the end. The other expression, kudos, ends in an S. Technically, it's a singular word, but everyone uses it as a plural word. So in real life, it's always plural. It is also an expression used, but not for thanks, but for praising someone. It's closer to congratulations. I heard you got a new job. Kudos to you. Or kudos for your good work. You are praising them. You are saying something nice about them, perhaps congratulating them. Edward, E-D-W-A-R-D, from Malaysia, wants to know how we use the word literally. This is an interesting question because the meaning of the word literally has changed in the last, maybe 20, 25 years, maybe longer. But let's start with the actual dictionary definition, at least traditionally, of literal. Literal means exact or factual. I have a very literal mind. If you say to me, it's raining cats and dogs outside, which is an expression we use to mean that it's raining a lot, it's raining very hard, I would think of actual cats and dogs falling down from the sky to the ground. That would be a literal interpretation, that there are actually little cats and little dogs that are falling down from the clouds. Of course, that's not what we mean when we use that expression. But if I were to interpret it literally, that is what I would think of. The opposite here of literal would be figurative, F-I-G-U-R-A-T-I-V-E. To speak figuratively means to use what are called metaphors. Love is a rose. Well, love isn't actually literally a rose, but we can use that metaphor, that equation, that equaling love equals rose, to speak figuratively. We might also call this symbolic language. Literally also can mean really or actually, in a way that is factually true. For example, if someone smokes a lot and then they get cancer, lung cancer, you could say, well, if they continue smoking, they could literally kill themselves. They would actually kill themselves. We're not speaking figuratively. We're not using kill as some sort of symbol. We mean you will actually die. That's the traditional dictionary definition of literally. However, more recently, people have begun to use literally when they just want to add emphasis. Let's say you eat chicken every day, and eventually you get tired of eating chicken. You might say, if I eat another piece of chicken, I will literally kill myself. But of course, you aren't going to actually kill yourself. You're using literally to provide some sort of emphasis, to show how strongly you feel about something. In fact, you're using literally in a figurative way, just the opposite of what it traditionally has meant. You hear this all the time now. If you are watching television, listening to an interview, you will hear people say literally when, in fact, they are just trying to emphasize something, that it's not literal at all. And that's why it's a little confusing when you hear this expression nowadays. It's one of those words that has come to mean the opposite of what it used to mean, or at least what it means in a formal, traditional sense. Finally, Lucas, L-U-C-A-S, in Brazil, wants to know the meaning of the expression, take the time, or to take the time. We need to take the time to do something. This means we need to do something carefully, thoroughly, without going fast, without rushing it, to be very careful about it. I need to take the time to understand this problem if I am going to find a solution. I can't rush it. I can't go quickly. There's a similar sounding expression to take your time, or to take one's time. There, you're saying that you're going to go slowly, but you're telling the person, I'm not going to be in a hurry. To take the time means to spend the time necessary to do something. To take your time means to go slowly, even if you don't really have to go slowly. Someone may say, here's a book I want you to read. You don't need to return it to me quickly. Take your time. In other words, there's no rush. But if someone says, here's an important document, an important piece of paper, an article I want you to read, take the time to understand it very well so that you can explain it to everyone else. That's a little different, although normally take the time is not a command. It could be used that way, as I just did. We try to take the time to answer your questions thoroughly here on ESL Podcast. If you have a question or comment, you can email us at ESLPOD@ESLPOD.com. No hurry. Take your time. Whenever you email us, we'll be fine. From Los Angeles, California, I'm Jeff McQuillan. Thank you for listening. Come back and listen to us again right here on The English Cafe. ESL Podcast English Cafe is written and produced by Dr. Jeff McQuillan and Dr. Lucy Say. Copyright 2012 by the Center for Educational Development.